Inside the Birds is back. What's going on, everyone? It's Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5. The Fanatic, Jeff Mosher here alongside my Inside the Birds co-host, Adam Kaplan. Of course, we got Tyler Zuli in the window tonight. This is the first time in our three shows that I'm actually going to acknowledge Tyler doing a great job as producer. So hat tip to you, Tyler. I won't forget now. A lot of talk about. First of all, Inside the Birds is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code FANATIC for a special offer. When you sign up, that's code FANATIC for a special offer when you sign up only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Man, oh man, Adam Kaplan, we got a lot to talk about. I know a lot of people, and we will do this, right? We're going to get into how this game ended. Overtime, the questionable play calling, the penalties, Carson Wentz's play, all of that. But what I guess I find interesting, and I like that we come on at 6 o'clock, because by then, you know, everybody's kind of like emptied the cupboard on their emotions and everything like that. And we get to maybe take a step back and look at it a little bit broader. I wonder this to you. I'm going to pose this question to you, and I would also ask this of anybody who's listening. People are very stuck on how the game ended, on the whether or not Doug should have punted, kicked the field goal, the play calling. I get it. Trust me. I get it. But I do wonder, Adam, if the Eagles win the game instead of tying, right? If they win, do you really feel that much better about the team's overall direction as they head into this brutal three-game stretch? I mean, does it change the fact that Carson Wentz threw two interceptions for the third straight game and it looks totally lost? Does it change the fact that they keep losing players to injuries? Does it change the fact that the defense, once again, even in a better effort, does not produce a turnover and flip the field? Does it change the fact that you've got no contribution from last year's second-round pick, this year's third-round pick, not much from this year's second-round pick? You know what I'm saying? Like, I understand that people are very upset, and they should be, but I wonder how much happier they would really be or more optimistic they could really be if the Eagles are 1-2 instead of being 0-2-1. Because, honestly, it's not much of a difference, right, with the tie and the win. If the Cowboys, say, finish 9-7 and the Eagles are 9-6-1, that's advantage.
That's what it
Eagles.
Means something.
Right, yeah.
So my issue is this. It doesn't change the fact that, and you were talking about some of the draft picks that are not contributing. It doesn't mask any of that. The Bengals are an awful football team. I mean, let's face it. They have yet to win a road game under Zach Taylor as the head coach.
They're going 0-9. Back to last year.
Yes,
right?
They're 0-9-1. Okay,
amazing.
They're terrible. Okay, they've won two games in 8 out of 18. Excuse me. Now actually out of 19, they're 0-2. They're 0-2-1 like the Eagles. So. They're a bad football team. You should not struggle against a team like this. That's why it's so hard to pick a game with the Eagles, because right when you think that there's no way they could lose or underachieve, they underachieve. So to answer your question, I don't think it would change anything. And the fans are smart. They know what they're looking at. If you look at our message board on Facebook, our Facebook group, they almost every day it's Metcalf, missed on that. They'll list every player the Eagles have missed on since 2017, the 17 draft is a major reason why this team is not as good as they should be.
Oh, huge.
The sins, I've called it, of the 17 draft. They've just missed on too many picks. Even Nate Gary, who...
He's like their second best pick from that draft.
And by the way, he should not be starting.
No.
There's no excuse. And when you really look at this roster, though, it still should be. They should be way better than this. On paper, this should be about a 9-7 team.
Mm-hmm.
They will be lucky to have 7 wins with this roster right now. The way that they're playing, the way the quarterback's playing, the lack of good enough coaching. Coaches are working their ass off, but they're not reaching the players like they need to. They're not helping the players like they need to. You can't always say it's lack of execution. That was Chip Kelly's famous phrase. Well, he kept saying it all 3 years, and then he got fired.
Right.
So at some point, you got to change up. Whatever the messaging is, it's not working.
Right. So I've been saying for the last 2 weeks, there's micro reasons for losing a game, which is those in-game decisions. There's turnovers, right? Those penalties. Those are all reasons. And then obviously, we will get into how the game ended and some of those last two series in overtime. But then there's the macro. There's the bigger picture. And to me, the biggest picture of all this is that even if the Eagles won, I would be very, very concerned about them going down the road, because Carson is broken right now. Carson needs to be fixed. If Carson is fixed, it I don't think the fishbowl for Doug Peterson and every single play call and whether it was good or not or decision is as intense as it is. And I'm not absolving Doug at all. I'm just saying if Carson is better, if Carson's not throwing into terrible windows like he did on the first interception, if he's not, you know, if he is connecting with open receivers like Miles Sanders, then you've got a better quarterback making his team better. And you're probably winning two of these three games. Okay. If Carson's been, so that's why we can talk about what needs to be fixed, and we can talk about Doug, we can talk about defense, we can talk about draft picks playing better, talent development, all of it goes into it, but the number one thing right now is fixing Carson Wentz.
And how do you do that?
That is the question. Because Doug seems to think he has the answer for it today. We'll get into it. He's going to modify the offense. He's done that in the past. There has been some success with that. I'm a little surprised that he came out on Monday and advertised to the NFL that he's going to be making some potential modifications to the offense. And, you know, this is just goes to Doug not really winning the press conference a whole lot. But, Adam, when this thing goes back to not just this year, but even last year and even a little bit, the year, 2018, he was pretty good. You know, he came back from the injury, right? He missed the first two games.
Let's have the back fracture.
Right. Yep. Came back against Indianapolis, had a really nice game. His mechanics were pretty good that year. I think his passer rating that year, even when they were losing, was over 100.
Well, his...
And 5 or 110. Yeah.
Completion percentage was way up. It was about 60, around 69%. Now, some of that I had an issue with because he was not making a lot of challenging throws. But again, he was accurate. Okay, we'll give it up to him.
Right.
The real regression was last year. And as we mentioned on our show Inside the Birds when we started in the spring of 18, I brought up the fact that at some point, and I didn't know when it would happen, the Eagles will really miss John DeFilippo the most and Frank Reich also.
Yeah.
But particularly DeFilippo because he worked closely with Carson. And he was the one who would challenge Carson, according to multiple sources.
Right.
He really coached Carson hard and... You know, as one person told me, that Monday when they would meet could be brutal sometimes. Even when, and this is talking about the 17 year where he was playing brilliant football. But the thing that is not being done here, there's something missing with the accountability. Something has happened here where he keeps doing the same thing over and over and over that's wrong. It's the lack of proper fundamentals. Getting your feet set. Squaring your shoulders. Not pointing that left foot down. Whatever it is, and getting good balance. Whatever it is, he's not doing it right. And I know the coaches see it because they're watching it with him on Monday morning. So explain to me what the problem is. Like, why can't you do the right thing?
So it's, to me, right, it's got to be a mixture of both. We have seen bad mechanics, and bad mechanics can lead to turnovers. It can lead to overthrowing. But we've also seen, and I think sometimes this to me is more concerning because I think mechanics can be corrected as long as the coaching is there. Now, we can question whether or not he's being coached well enough, but if the coaches are the ones that are the issue, coaches can be replaced, new coaches can be brought in. The not seeing the field, not seeing open receivers, and then even in the case of overthrowing Miles Sanders, I watched the throw. I don't think his mechanics were off, but it almost felt like he's trying to aim the ball. You can say that's mechanics. What I'm simply saying is the fundamentals of the throw seemed okay. Him and what's going on upstairs does not seem okay.
But you gotta hit that throw.
That's what I'm saying.
That's a throw you can't miss. This is just the thing. The routine throws that he used to be able to hit, he's not hitting them. When you miss routine throws, you can't win in the National Football League. You cannot win. It is impossible. When you don't hit throws that you're supposed to make, you're putting the team to a disadvantage. A coaching can only take you so far. I could talk all I want about how I know that for a fact that Carson needs to be coached harder. But there becomes a point where coaching does not matter. It's up to the player to do it the way he's been taught and take the coaching and stop trying to be a hero and do it on your own. And that's the issue we have here.
Sir, I regret to inform you that there's no such thing as a routine throw in the NFL, as I was told by the Philadelphia Eagles head coach.
Or layups, yes.
Who now wants to modify the offense to make a lot of simple throws. But I was told there were no such thing as simple throws in the NFL. So which one is it, right?
He needs to make that decision. And by the way, not a big deal, but Graylin Arnold and Deontay Burnett reverted back to the practice squad.
Okay.
There were the call-ups. There were two of the call-ups on Saturday. So Burnett, who, oh my, how many snaps? He almost played all the snaps.
Well, he did, and now here's what's an interesting situation. DeSean Jackson is kind of iffy right now as to whether or not he's going to play Sunday with the hamstring, right?
Doesn't sound good.
Jalen Reagor's already
out. I understand.
Okay, it doesn't. Which
I mean, it's not a bad strain, but what I'm saying is his history of hamstring issues.
Right.
I'll see. He needs to practice first, and I'll believe it.
Right. I believe the rule on the elevating from the practice squad is you only get to do it two times.
Correct.
You've already used Deonte Burnett once, so theoretically, if you call him up for San Francisco, that's the last time you'd be able to elevate him from the practice squad. I think we're getting closer to the point where you may have to sign him to the 53, so you don't have to play with that funky rule anymore. Or do you just burn? Can you burn the two and then sign him?
No. The way it is you would have to leave him on your 53. You couldn't set him back.
Okay.
You would have to cut him to get him back on the practice squad after if you do it twice.
Uh-huh.
If you call him up twice, the only way he gets back to the practice squad is if you cut him first. He is not claimed. Then you could sign him to your practice squad. So you don't want to do that because he's a guy who was with them last season, and he does have value to them. So you could, as you just said, that you can only do it twice. So they have to be careful. And don't forget, Quez Watkins is eligible to come off the IR because this year.
Yeah.
Now,
I don't know what you can reasonably expect.
I know, exactly. I know. But you know what? They're in dire straits at wide receiver. This early, going to week four, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. So last year, part of why I think the Eagles are not completely dead and out of the water yet is because there's so much time left and because we have seen this before. We saw it last year. We saw it 2 years ago. Now, 2 years ago, you might want to throw it out a little bit because that's when Carson got hurt with the back and then they brought Nick in and Nick kind of saved the day. But last year, they're down to Miami. They lose. It's a 3-game losing streak and they turn it around. However, not everything is always according to Hoyle like the year before. Last year, they had the luxury of being able to play the Giants twice and Washington once, and those two teams were a dumpster fire, even worse than the Eagles were. Now, you got San Francisco, you got Pittsburgh, you got Baltimore, before you have to play the Giants, I believe, on Thursday night football. They are not going to be favored in any one of those three games, right?
There's no way. This team was an underdog in the Super Bowl. But because they're in the NFC East, the NFC East is 2-9-1.
Okay,
2-9-1 this division is, okay?
Oh, so awful.
I mean, the Giants and Eagles don't have a win. Washington beat Philly, and Dallas has a win, okay? It's terrible. That's the number one reason they're going to hang in there, because their roster is not this bad. This is on paper around a 9-win team.
Mm-hmm.
I probably missed. I probably overrated a little bit.
I mean, how could you have known about all the injuries that are going to happen? I know they're the Eagles, but you just don't go into the air.
Yeah,
this guy's going to get hurt and that guy's going to get hurt.
And we don't know with Jeffrey. The way he's explaining to me was that even if he plays this week, you can't play him a lot because he hasn't practiced.
Right.
I mean, he did look good, I'm told. Really good in last week's practice in the limited work they gave him, which was individual work. But Arthego Whiteside, he's a non-contributor. He's headed to what I call Sidney Jonesville. There becomes a point where the coaches lose confidence, the quarterback loses confidence,
right,
and he doesn't get on the field. And the fact in a game where they needed him badly, he played so few snaps, it's unfathomable. But it is where we are with him. Jackson gets hurt. Hightower played a lot. He had that crazy play where he crossed at the same time that Ertz did.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam Archuleta goes, wait a minute, who was that going to? Was it to Hightower or to Ertz? And I don't know. Ertz's vision was blocked. I don't know how he saw it. And then there's the reliable Greg Ward. That's really it.
Yeah. Now, how far down the road from Sidney Jonesville is Jaquan Jarrett Town?
Well, Jarrett got cut. He got cut for his second season, right?
I know.
Wow.
That's what I'm saying.
He's on
man.
A second season now.
Picks.
I just can't believe that he cannot make himself a factor. I mean, this guy's a second-round pick. This is not Mac Hollins last year where he didn't get a pass target for like 7 weeks. I mean, this guy's a second-round pick. Whether he should have been or not is another question.
Yes.
But he's a second-round pick. You and I were at this. Let me tell you.
This is important to sell. Yeah, go ahead.
You and I were at the combine together, and we're around. We were at the Marriott there, and this is they have a bar that is really good. A lot of NFL personnel people, they're scouts and front office people. And the subject of J.J. Arcega-Whiteside came around. And I remember, I think you were there when I said it. I said to this one personnel director, I said, hey, where did you have J.J. Arcega-Whiteside? He goes, seventh round or undrafted free agent. And I said, what?
Yep.
But then a guy to my left said, no, we had a low two or high three.
Yeah, I remember them saying a 2-3 on him.
Yeah, yeah. And I was the variance on this guy. And now we think the Eagles had a two on him, but they may not have.
Uh-huh.
You never know. Sometimes you take a guy because you have a need position. But right, and we led up to the show. This is a game. We led up to this game this week on our shows, Inside the Birds, which you get on any podcast platform, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, 6 a.m. We said, this is a week where he needs to play, and they need him. They need him to become a factor. Make yourself a pass target. He did not. Someone doesn't have confidence in him. It's either the head coach who calls the plays or the quarterback. So it's just not working. Rager's out with his thumb surgery. It's supposed to be, I'm told, 6 weeks is the low end. So this pushes him around the bye week, which is week 9. So he's not going to be here for a while. He had the surgery last Thursday. They just, and now with Goddard's injury, he's out. He's definitely not playing this week.
Right, so it doesn't feel like last year when you had the stars aligned. It feels like actually it's going to be even more difficult to turn this thing around because you already have a slumping quarterback and you have fewer playmakers and you have a harder schedule.
Here's your available pass targets right now for Carson Wentz. The great Zach Ertz, great game yesterday, by the way, really good game. John Hightower, who's inconsistent. Greg Ward, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, and Deontay Burnett, they have to make a decision on. You made a very good point about they'll have one more call-up for him. So they've got a problem here.
They're going to have to keep him on the 53.
I would. Why wouldn't you?
No, I like the kid. He brings a presence when he's on the field.
Open.
He catches the ball. He gets he can get open, right?
Yeah. I mean, yeah. He does get open. Richard Rodgers had to play yesterday. I mean, he had to play more than they probably would have liked because Goddard got hurt. They've got problems right now.
They have a lot of problems. We'll talk about them, 610-632-0975. We will get to some calls at the bottom of the hour real quick. Not the bottom of the hour. I mean, before we head to the break. I do want to go, though, dissect a little bit of overtime with you. I think people are so hyper-focused on the final drive and Doug punting instead of either kicking the field goal or trying a play there, that the prior drive to me, not the Matt Pryor drive, but the previous drive, it has been overlooked. And that's where I really think the Eagles lost the game. So to refresh everybody's memory, it's a 1st and 15 because of a Lane Johnson false start. And they're at the Cincinnati 43. And Carson Wentz throws a 6-yard pass to Deontay Burnett. So on 1st and 15, I'm sorry, at the 48. That takes them to the Cincinnati 42. So it's 2nd and 9. In Cincinnati territory at the 42. Now, the play right there is to run it, to me. It's to think that Cincinnati's going to think you're passing because it's 2nd and 9. 2 runs, all right? If you pick up only 5 yards total on 2 runs, you're getting to the 36 or 37, right? That's a makeable field goal for Jake Elliott. But instead, drop back to pass. Carson's got to scramble. Because of that, Nate Herbig's got to hold a block for more than 2 seconds. And because he's Nate Herbig, it's a holding penalty. And then you're backed up. And then you have to pass again. Incomplete. Bam. Punt. That's where they look. I mean, we're so focused on what happened after that. But I look at that, I'm like, isn't that like almost elementary? I'm at the Cincinnati 42. I can run 2 plays, pick up a few yards, set up a field goal, and I'm out of here with a win.
I would have. Here's what I would have done. Offensive coaches tell me that there are a couple calls in your playbook which are guaranteed to work. Quick throws.
Mm-hmm.
Just an out to the sideline. It's almost impossible as long as the throw is accurate for it not to work.
Right.
Because there's a certain route which is it's a beater. You always have it in your offense because you know it's guaranteed to work.
Like the Alshon Jeffery catch in 2017. That was a very quick out.
But that was not 5 yards.
That was long. But yeah, I'm illustrating a point where you can set yourself
but
up.
But just a quick sideline throw. This one, the throw I have is much easier.
Mm-hmm.
Even Carson with his inaccuracy should be able to hit this. No problem.
Right.
And that's what you do. Where a run sometimes is not easy. You know, I would have thrown the football there. But anyway, the bottom line is you got to be smart. And they had 11 penalties. This was a bad penalty game for them. And this is just overall, it's inexplicable to me that they tied this game. And I'm sure it felt like a loss to them. It had to. It's embarrassing.
I imagine so. And it's just not going to get easier with the injuries, with the schedule, with the defense that we haven't talked about that continues even when they play well. First of all, I don't want to like get so giddy on the defense. I mean, you should own that Bengals deep offensive line. It's a terrible offensive line. In fact, we said in our Inside the Birds pregame live show that we do, you know, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, that this would be the area where the Eagles can dominate. They did. And Jim Schwartz, yes, he did dial up the pressure. Was he so sophisticated with his design pressures that he made Joe Burrow think twice or confused Burrow? No. He made Burrow get hit. No. Okay. Burrow made no mistakes. And once again, now give me this stat about the Eagles and producing turnovers. It's unbelievable.
So over the last seven games, going back to last season, they only have four turnovers forced.
Right.
That tells you you're doing nothing to make the quarterback think. I know that they're definitely getting pressure on the quarterback.
Right.
But it's the disguise pre-snap. Now, the Adam Marchuleta brought it up, who was the color analyst for CBS in the game, did say he was surprised that they did because they didn't really do it. They typically, as we've outlined over the 2 years of our show, that Jim Schwartz does not do any pre-snap disguise. He just rarely does it, and he did some in this game.
He did, but if I can...
Very little.
I remember Adam Marchuleta saying that on like the first blitz because the linebackers were in the A-gaps, and then they dropped back. Okay?
That's what pre- and post-snap is, yeah.
But Jim does that. That, to me... Well, I've seen Jim do that 100 times. That's not like something really wacky that Jim has never thought of before.
It's the ability to make the quarterback think. When you do that and you rush him, you win.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to produce turnovers. And the other thing, here's another thing. We've never talked about this before, but we have our show tonight. I might as well bring it up.
Okay.
Are they teaching guys to strip the football? Are they, you got to teach it. Marquand Manuel is the D-backs coach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm told he's a pretty sharp guy, and I talked to someone who's coached with him before.
Mm-hmm.
They got to start teaching this too. I don't know what they're teaching them, but this is, they don't have a defensive turnover. They have one turnover forced. It's because Cooper Kupp had a loose ball.
That was special returning teams, it. Not right. Defense, right?
Right. So this is ridiculous. I mean, this is, to me, if I'm Doug Peterson, this is where I loved Andy Reid. When Andy Reid would get involved in getting, he would observe the defense and he'd talk to the defensive coaches, wonder why things aren't happening.
Right.
Doug should be doing this. Why aren't you getting turnovers? This is not acceptable.
I agree. We're going to talk about that. We're going to get to phone calls on the other side, but we got to take a break here. Inside the Birds Radio, Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosher here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic. Now, back to Inside the Birds.
With Jeff Mosher and Adam Kaplan.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 97.5 The Fanatic, Philadelphia.
All right, Inside the Birds Radio here. Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosher. 610-632-0975 is the number if you want to get in and talk with us. Man, so many obstacles right now for the Philadelphia Eagles, and there's a lot of questions left to be answered. And we'll get into some of the coaching elements of it, and we'll get into some of the personnel and talent development elements of it. But I did promise I would take some calls, so let's start it off with Justin in South Jersey. What's going on, Justin?
Hey, what's going on, Mosh? Adam, how you doing, man?
How are you?
Good, man. Welcome to Inside the Birds Radio.
Thanks for having me. I've been on hold, you know, chomping at the bit. I mean, I hope I can get to my couple things.
Sure.
I want to go right to the OT thing. I hope people can wrap their head around this. We got the ball three times in overtime. Three times.
I've never seen so many possessions in one overtime
game. By the way, remember, overtime was moved from 15 minutes to 10 minutes a couple years ago.
Usually, the way the games have gone, Justin, right, the last 2 years, it's like usually one or two drives and it's done.
Right.
And that's it. It's over. Yeah. And then not only that, we got to Cincinnati's 42, I believe, twice,
yep,
or at least close to it.
Yep.
So it's like, I don't, like you said, people are, you know, I'm obviously completely furious about the last drive, but the second to last drive, again, it's like, you know, Wentz is frustrated. He's not playing well. He's pressing. It's obvious. We have no weapons on the outside. There's you know, Sanders was basically unstoppable the entire game. Now, I just saw a quote or something. I don't know if you asked it, Jeff, but, you know, why wasn't Sanders utilized more in the second half? And Doug said he was battling through fatigue or something. Like,
yeah, he had a I noticed it, actually. In fact, I was hoping he was coming back. He got tackled to the ground really hard, and that's why Boston Scott was in late in the game.
Right.
I was like,
yeah, well, that was a question that now I understand.
That's what happened.
But to Justin's point, right, and I don't even care if it's Corey Clement. If you're at the 42 and it's second down, just power ahead, get yourself 3, 4, 5 yards and make it a makeable field goal. Yeah.
I mean, it's unreal. I'm looking at the play things real quick, and on the last drive, we got to, I don't know what it was, right before Wentz scrambled and got like 2 yards, and then, I don't know, they ran it on the first play, and then they dropped back on second and third down, where if we would have just ran the ball with whoever and gotten 2 or 3 yards, we're kicking the field goal, because even with Herbig's terrible false start, or Pryor, whoever it was,
right,
both of them had a terrible penalty in
the
last
for time. That one, for the one, the series we're talking about, it was Herbig who had that holding on the Carson Wentz,
scrambled.
Yeah, it was like a play action, but he had a run. Yeah, he had a scramble for 10 yards.
That doesn't happen if you're running the ball. It doesn't. There's no holding on runs very, very rarely, at least.
Yeah, I would just say the percentages are a lot lower. I mean, anything could happen, but you're right. The percentages
it's
are
like
a lot
literally
lower.
The stars aligned for Doug to just go to the running game, take the pressure off of Wentz, win this game. It's easy peasy. Literally, both in the second to last drive and the last drive. That's the big thing that's bothering me. Then the other thing, I mean, first of all, the new norm. Is this the new norm, Doug? The most aggressive guy ever? You're going for a tie? I know this is a big jump, but I'm fed up. I literally, get him out of here. I'm tired of it. Since Reich and, like you guys said, DeFilippo have left, it is clear that Doug just wants to pat Carson on the back. He's got Press Taylor doing the same thing.
I hear you,
Justin. I don't necessarily agree with that.
And thanks for the call.
The latter part, I don't agree with. He doesn't want to just pat him in the back. He clearly is frustrated.
Yeah.
Jeff and I on our show last week, you know, you brought the subject up. Was I surprised with what Doug said last Monday,
acknowledging that was a good question,
right? Yeah. I was stunned, and he shouldn't have done it, but he did.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, Doug has taken some, I don't want to say subtle shots. He's not defended Wentz like he has in the past.
Right.
And that's because it gets to a point with coaching, there's only so much you feel like you can do. If there's a certain point where it's on the player to do the job the way we coach you to do it. Don't try to do it on your own and be a hero. And that's the problem with Wentz, is he's trying to do too much. I think the people are right that Carson's trying to put the team on his back, but there's a way you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't as though he played well when they were 0-0 with a record of playing Washington in week one.
Right.
He also didn't play well there. So he's been on a downward slide. The regression really started last season. And the problem that people have is who's coaching him and how he's being coached.
Right. So let's get into that. If the Eagles come back, I don't think Doug Peterson gets fired this year anytime before the end of December.
No way. Yeah, no way.
What we know about Jeffrey is he prides himself on being very deliberate, not making knee-jerk reactions, being quote-unquote emotionally intelligent, right? And so he's not going to fire even Chip Kelly, who he couldn't stand by the end, got 15 weeks.
But he fired before the season ended.
Right. That's why I said before December.
Out. Right. It had nothing to do. I don't care what Jeffrey says. It had zero to do with the coaching search. It had everything to do with Chip Kelly.
Of course. So I don't see him firing Doug Peterson, even if they're 0-5-1 after six
games.
He'll
let him finish the season out.
But Adam,
go ahead.
He's not. He does not have that same kind of deliberation and calmness when it comes to assistants. I mean, these guys get fired after they win the NFC East, right? I mean, fired a coordinator and two position coaches.
Well, but again, there's a part of that you just said when you said who made the firing.
Mm-hmm.
The owner did.
Exactly.
Okay. The owner's got involved.
Right.
More than he should have. See, since Joe Banner left, they don't have a team president who's involved in football operations, Don Spolinski's only business side.
Right.
So it's Howie Roseman, a general manager, and Howie will, you know, obviously will be managing the situation as it goes along. But what I've said with Doug, and this is the worst part of him, and it's really not debatable if you get research, he's done an awful job evaluating his coaches since he became the head coach.
Well,
it's one area where he struggles badly.
How many wide receivers coaches have they had in his 5 years of coaching?
Five
wide receivers coaches in 5 years.
I mean,
I think Greg Lewis might have been the best of them, and he fired him first.
Well, yeah, but you say that.
Well, he's the only one that's employed right now by an NFL team.
I mean,
so
Gunnar Brewer after 1 year.
Right.
Here's the thing that I have an issue with Doug Peterson. And I understand that he wants to promote from within, which is admirable.
Uh-huh.
But you have to know your own coaches who work for you. You have to, it's like when Jeffrey Lurie did not know what was going on inside his own building. Once he found out, Chip Kelly was fired because he was appalled.
Right.
But when these coaches are on your staff and you let it get to the senior level, to your owner, you've done a bad job. Like, that's inexcusable. You need to know who these people are and whether they're good enough. He had an opportunity to hire a couple good receiver coaches that were outside the organization. Sanjay Lau is now with the Seahawks. They didn't want Sanjay.
Mm-hmm.
They thought he was too hard. He coaches very, very hard. They didn't want him. Hey, Sanjay's talked to anyone who's coached with him. I had one coach say he's the best receivers coach he's ever been around
at
any level.
He's with the Seahawks right now?
Yeah, he's now with the Seahawks.
How's their young wide receiver doing?
Pretty damn well.
Yeah.
Pretty damn well. people say it should have been an Eagle, but anyway, I digress. But no, you have to know your own people.
Uh-huh.
And the lack of awareness, and then the abomination, that press conference in January after they lost to the Seahawks, when Doug Peterson says Mike Groh and Carson Walter coming back before he'd met with the owner.
Right.
He knows better. He knows the owner. To not know the owner, one of these guys out, like, how do you... We knew this. We don't work for the team.
There you go.
Fans on Twitter knew this. But you don't know this? Have better awareness, man. This is a part of this guy's problem. And I'm a fan of Doug's. But we're truth tellers here. We are not fans, okay? For people you knew, you know, we people
objective.
Think they,
right,
they want
down
us.
The, middle.
The reason why we have so many listeners and people who download our show every week is they're there to learn something. It's unvarnished. I don't care if the Eagles win or not. It doesn't matter to me. It helps our business.
Mm-hmm.
But quite frankly, when they lose, more people want to talk about it. But I'm not rooting for them to lose or win. It's just we want people to learn. Mm-hmm. And there's a real problem with this head coach and his inability to evaluate his coaches properly. He's not done a good job of it. It's inexcusable, and it's not defensible because it's a fact.
I want to get into Press Taylor in particular because he's the one that's coming under the microscope now. But first, let's go to Mike in KOP. What's going on, Mike?
Hey, good evening, guys. How you guys doing?
Good, how are you?
We're good, Mike. Go ahead with your Howie Roseman rant.
No, because I'm not going to do that anymore because I've already proved my point.
Yes.
I mean, like, but what I am going to say is that I'm not going to root for the Eagles to win anymore until Howie Roseman is terminated as GM. And the reason I say that is to affect any kind of change in pro sports, your team has to be bad. And then front offices get, let go, coaches get fired, players get let go. And for me, since this team is so bad and it's all because the GM can't talent evaluate to save his life,
okay,
I'm just gonna keep rooting for the Eagles to lose to affect that kind of change.
Let me ask you this, Mike. A serious discussion. Let's say the Eagles just completely bottom out, and Jeffrey Lurie decides I'm cleaning house, starting with Howie, maybe even Doug. You know, the whole thing, whole gamut, right?
Okay.
Now you followed this team. I've talked to you forever on these airwaves, and yes, I feel like you have a pretty good sense of Jeffrey Lurie as an owner, right?
Yeah.
If Jeffrey Lurie is going to hire now a new executive football president of football operations or new general manager or head guy on the personnel chain, do you think he's going to go reverse course and hire kind of a guy who came up through the football scouting sector? Or do you think he's probably going to hire someone who came up like Joe Banner or Howie, like through salary cap and analytics? Where do you think he would go with that?
So, I get where you're going with that, but I hope that our emotionally intelligent owner would realize that he's made a mistake in doing that route, and that you need someone that actually can see and evaluate talent if you're going to have them in that position. Otherwise, I don't know. For me, I guess I'll be just happy change is better than what we have now. So I'll take the unknown versus what we have. So even if it's another Howie type, at least maybe that guy has a better sense of talent. I don't know. But I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't. I mean, the 17 draft, like you guys were saying, has wrecked this team. And there were no good picks in that. Derek Barnett has not lived up to the hype. Nate Gary is on the team, but he shouldn't even be playing professional football. And there's a litany of other choices. Just with J.J. Arcega-Whiteside alone, 169 career total yards. That was eclipsed in one game by Justin Jefferson on Sunday.
It was. It's crazy, Mike. No, listen, man. I know how you're feeling now. Thanks for the call. I just think, Adam, this is a discussion that is probably for a little bit down the road, but Mike has brought it up. Jeffrey Lurie comes in the few press conferences that he does every year, right? And they ask him about the state of the franchise a lot. And he constantly talks about next-gen stats and being on the forefront of analytics and always wanting to be ahead of the curve. And, you know, I believe he's come out since the draft and talked about why they drafted Jalen Hurts and has echoed the same sentiment about, you know, we want backup quarterbacks who are cost-controlled. We're trying to be on the forefront of that, too. So for me to think that if Jeffrey is going to clean house, then he's going to wind up hire, a real, like, kind of football scout, Joe Douglas, quote-unquote, type of guy to lead his entire organization, I don't see that happening.
No. The bottom line is, this is an analytics team, okay? This team, a lot of their draft picks since 17 have been based on numbers. Right or wrong, that's the truth based on the information they have on it. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside was analytically driven. Size, 6'2" even. Catch radius, contested catches. There are certain metrics that match up on these guys supposedly being able to be good at the next level.
Mm-hmm.
Numbers don't make you a good football player. They might be in baseball, but the numbers don't match up like they do in baseball.
Right.
The analytics just don't match. It's completely different. So you have to know that when you're evaluating talent. And I could tell you as a fact, as I talked to Joe Banner today, I asked Joe, I said, listen, just have a question. When you came on our show, Inside the Birds, we did a show with Joe in May. Please explain to our viewers, what was your thought process of bringing analytics in terms of the draft? He goes, let me just stop right there. I didn't think analytics had much of an impact. It should in the draft. What he said was, the one thing he likes with analytics and matching up to draft process, which almost all teams do this, they look at history in terms of measurables. What kind of chances this guy had to be successful if he's got 32.5-inch arms compared to 34 as a left tackle?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll have it since 1965. Here are the guys who are successful. Let's say there are 5,000 tackles drafted. If the guy had less than 32-inch arms, only 1% of them made it. Like, that, you need to know that.
Right.
That's what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
He thinks for game day matchups and game day play calling absolutely is essential. It gives you a decided advantage.
Right.
By the way, how do you think the Eagles won in 17 with analytics, game day play calling? Doug Peterson, part of his job is he had to accept it because mm-hmm. that was part of getting the job, but so much of the decisions that Doug made were based on analytics, and guess what? It worked.
Yeah.
But not in the draft. It's completely different.
Well, yeah. I mean, and by the way, just for people who are listening, we're not anti-analytics. And then there's also...
I'm not at all.
There's also levels of analytics, yeah. Right? We once talked with Bill Polian, and he was like, oh, I used analytics all the time. I mean, size, height, weight... That's not the analytics we're talking about, okay? It's the advanced ones where you try to glean how a player is going to be based on certain, not just athletic marks, but all sorts of measurables and things that go into the equation. You know, the Pittsburgh Steelers, to me, Baltimore Ravens, two teams that draft fairly well. Of course, they have misses like anybody, but they're really good at getting skill position players later in the draft, in the second, third, fourth, and fifth rounds. And I know a little bit about the Steelers' habit of drafting, and I never hear them, from who I speak to there, talk about heavy, heavy analytics approach. They look for football players who fit the identity of their franchise. And if you know anything about the Steelers, they've basically had the same identity for the last 50 years. And they don't have, like, 30 Super Bowls, but they have, what, six? So five or six, so they've got, they're pretty good. And we know that the Ravens have had some down years, but they also have Super Bowls and they're always seemingly in it and competitive. And I always come back to this with the Eagles. I don't know what their identity is because I feel like it changes year to year. Like, I don't know what makes an Eagle to say that's an eagle. I mean, I know for Jim Schwartz's defense, if it's a defensive lineman who gets upfield, that's good, right? That fits what Jim Schwartz is going to do. But Jim Schwartz hasn't been the defensive coordinator here for 20 years either. I just don't know how they go about building their team with a model in mind, because I feel like every year or two, they have kind of different rationale.
Yeah, that's a good question. Their identity is hard to figure out what they are. You would think obviously they're a quarterback-driven team. Mm-hmm. They extend the quarterback's contract at the time that they did it. They thought he was going to be one of the top five quarterbacks in the league, and he still might. But the fact of the matter is, when you look at this situation with what they are, they're not playing up to the level of talent on the roster. Now we probably overrated the roster. I'll be the first to admit it.
Well, did we? Well, hold on a second.
I thought they'd be 10
or
11 wins.
Carson Wentz is playing like you expect Carson Wentz to play. And, of course, if you don't have these injuries now to Goddard and Deshaun, if Jalen Reagor, I mean, isn't it fair to think that they would have been pretty good?
Yeah, but there are a lot of ifs here. If Wentz plays at an acceptable level, he's not.
I know, but like I'm saying, like, how could you have predicted that?
No, I wouldn't have. But even with that talent, the defense has not been nearly as good as I thought it would be. The secondary, other than Slay, played his ass off yesterday.
That's a fair point.
Their defense has not been anywhere near as good as I thought.
Roby Coleman has not performed at a high level.
No, he got replaced as a starting nickel.
I was told that was more matchup. He is a smaller guy. Strap is better. Same thing with T.J. Edwards playing over Duke Riley.
Okay.
That might change next week.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That was surprising. But their defense has not been dominant, and that defense has been on a regression. Now, I know someone with Eagles told me that. Just one thing with Schwartz's defense is this. By the time they're at week 13 or 14, they'll be somewhere in the upper half of most important categories, because he usually does that.
Right.
Now, and you mentioned this, I think, on one of our past shows, one of the problems here is you've had so many personnel changes on defense. Secondary, obviously, with Slay, they're going to so much. Actually, Greg Cosell pointed this out. He made a really good point. He goes, they're playing more man coverage than anybody, even more than the Patriots and the Lions, who only play man coverage.
Right.
So that's a different philosophy. They've never done it like this. Plus, you have new players at linebacker. Defensive line, Hargrave is not there yet. I'm told his tape has not been great, now, obviously, because he missed 5 weeks.
Sure.
So he's not there yet. Avanti Maddox has not played well. He has not played well at all.
Right.
I don't
think Jalen Mills has played very well.
No, they're not getting out a lot of that Malcolm Jenkins position that he's playing. He's not doing it well. They don't have Will Parks.
Right.
If you add all the litany of issues, it gives you a bad football team, which they are, and that's the bottom line. They are a bad football team right now.
I'll go back to this too on the turnovers thing, because I think it correlates. They hit the quarterback a lot on Sunday and didn't get a turnover. They hit Jared Goff not as much as they wanted to, because Goff was rolling out a lot, but when Goff was in the pocket, he was awful in that game, and it's because they were getting the rush on him. So when you are able to get the rush, and they were able to rush Haskins a little bit too, when you're able to do that but you don't produce turnovers, that goes back to then your talent acquisition at linebacker, at safety, at corner, where, you know, you don't have a lot of high-profile playmakers other than Darius Slay. You don't have a lot of guys who are just got great noses for the football. You have guys who can hold it down,
but
which
again,
is what they've been using.
But
at
again, yes, but again, what are you doing to teach it? Marquand Manuel.
Do you think that linebackers can be taught to intercept passes better?
No. I'm talking about overall. I'm talking the secondary. That's where you're going to get your picks. Although Nate Gary yesterday, apparently I'm told, he once again had a chance. Tyler Boyd destroyed them in the middle of the field. It was like the same route.
Right.
Okay? Everything funneled to the middle, and Gary on his drops in his area, because they did play some zone, not a lot. They played, I'm told, a little bit of zone.
Well, sometimes they play man on the outside and
right,
zone.
Right, and zone with the linebackers.
Right.
And they
his depths weren't good.
Gary didn't play it right. They for whatever reason, and it's clearly not, it's less about coaching, it's more about personnel. They just don't have good enough football players right now.
Well,
with Parks being out, the secondary having issues, they're just not playing well enough. The D-line will get better as everybody gets healthier and gets better stamina and all that, but this defense is severely underachieving. That's a bottom line.
All right, we'll take our next break. We'll come back. I do want to get back into the Press Taylor conversation with you. Take more calls, 610-632-0975. Inside the Birds Radio, Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosher here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
97.5 The Fanatic. Now, back to Inside the Birds.
With Jeff Mosier and Adam Kaplan.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 97.5 The Fanatic, Philadelphia.
That's right, it's Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Jeff Mosier and Adam Kaplan. If you're not familiar with the Inside the Birds podcast, got to check it out. We drop during the season every Monday, every Wednesday, every Friday at 6 a.m. Check out our YouTube channel, Inside the Birds on YouTube. We do a weekly interview. Yeah, so that we call ITB TV.
With usually a former executive or a player.
Who did we have last week? I forgot. We had Dave Spadaro from PhiladelphiaEagles.com.
He had some great stuff with Carson because, you know, he's worked closely with him.
Yeah.
Dave was great. We've had Joe Banner, Bill Polian.
Dan Orlovsky.
Trey Thomas, Dan Orlovsky, Todd Herrmanns. You go through it all.
B. West.
Brian Westbrook was terrific on the running backs. So and great storytelling by the people who've worked in the league and for the Eagles and so forth. So we got it. We'll probably announce who we're going to have. We nailed something down, so we have to get through that, but we'll have somebody this week is pretty good. So love doing that. And we also love doing our show, our TV show, which is a two camera show.
That's
by
right.
The way, Jeff and I do the show, on Sundays, 3 hours before game time. So this week it'll be at 5 p.m. Remember, it's a Sunday night game.
Mm-hmm.
So what we're going to do this week, we're going to go five until probably a little bit after seven. As soon as the inactives are done, we'll analyze it. And there have been surprises every week with inactives and who's been active and not active.
Right.
Jernard Avery was active. I'm told he didn't look great, so that he needs to get going. And Tua Hill was inactive.
Mm-hmm.
So every week there's been a surprise. And then the big one, by the way, which I never saw coming, no one did, is Nate Sudfeld being inactive these last 2 weeks. He's no longer the number two quarterback. And you know, we had put on our show several months ago, 4 or 5 months ago, the Eagles were very involved in trying to sign Joe Flacco. They wound up not doing it.
In the preseason. In spring.
Yeah, spring. Yeah, and they decided, they backed away, decided not to do it. Joe needed surgery. And they made a decision to bring back Nate Sudfeld, paying him $2 million.
Mm-hmm.
And he's no longer the number two quarterback. That's not very good.
Well, let me ask you, because you said something on the podcast this morning's podcast, that I believe, to quote you, you said, look, the Eagles think that Nate has regressed since a couple of years ago when he had to come in and played that one game.
He has not been at the same level. This is another quarterback who has not played at the same level since the coaching changes after 17.
That's what I want to
get to. The guys left. Yeah.
Right. So in one hand, you have the organization calling itself a quarterback factory. On the other hand, right, we've got regression clearly right in front of our very eyes in Carson Wentz. And what we can't see, but what the organization is telling us through its inactive moves, is that Nate Sudfeld is not what they were hoping he would be at this time 2 years earlier, right? So then it goes back to the coaching that you're talking about. Ever since John DeFilippo left, it's been a different person. It's been Press Taylor.
He's the one.
As the quarterback's coach for Carson Wentz. This, to me, becomes problematic if things don't change, right? I mean, you have to question. You have to wonder. And one thing, I don't know if everybody knows, but like that Carson and Press Taylor have a good working relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're fond of each other. That's fine. You wouldn't want them to hate each other, of course. But you do wonder, you talked about the Monday morning, right? When you come in and you watch the film. That today for Carson should be a tense day at the office, because it should be watching film and it should be hearing that guy in your ear.
You don't want to hear it.
Carson,
right.
Look right there. Carson, your mechanics are not there. And I would love to be a fly on the wall. I think you have to question whether it feels that way for Carson in the meeting room.
Yeah, as a coach told me, who's been in the league a long time, he doesn't coach offense, but he goes, look, when the player fears you or he's not looking forward to being in that room with you because he knows you're going to get on you, it's going to finally register, okay, all right, I need to get myself together because I'm sick and tired of this guy being in my ears. You're just pointing out, because you're watching the tape together, and he already know, and you already know as a player you didn't play well. It's like Belichick when you would watch the Bill Belichick, the Football Life, or no, they did the 2009 NFL Films did the 2009 Patriots, and you could see Belichick pointing all. They might have won the game, but he's only finding the bad stuff.
Right.
Well, when you're being coached hard, it's for a reason, because people see greatness in you. And this is the issue now. You bring up Press Taylor. Just talking to people, Press is a really nice guy, and it's not a secret. Everybody knows this. He has a very close working relationship with the quarterback, which you can have as long as you can get on the guy and get the guy to buy in, get on the guy's case. I mean, we're speculating here, but there are some people who work for the Eagles just wonder how hard Carson is being coached.
Mm-hmm.
Now, unless you're in the room, you're not going to know unless you talk to the people who are in the room. Or you talk to people coach there, or you talk to the front office of watch and observe them. But the coaching has not been as good at the quarterback position since DeFilippo, and particularly, mm-hmm. and obviously Frank Reich and how he helped mentor Carson. That, and I get it. Some people called a coach at Camelot. That year, everything went right. The personnel decisions, free agency. Howie Roseman had the best year of his career. He'll never duplicate that. No one can. It's just everything went right.
Mm-hmm.
But the coaching was so spectacular. It was like, you talk quarterback factory. It was Peterson, who's a former coach, a former quarterback in the league,
right?
Worked for the Eagles,
mm-hmm.
quarterback for the Eagles. It was Frank Reich, one of the best backup quarterbacks in NFL history, and DeFilippo is known as one of the best quarterback developers in the National Football League. It doesn't get any better than that, okay? Talking to the Bears, that's why they felt that Nagy hired DeFilippo is to get Bill Lazor, who was here with Chip Kelly mm-hmm. for 1 year, DeFilippo and Matt Nagy. To develop to Trubisky, unfortunately, because they didn't have an offseason, just didn't work, but Foles is back there. Mm-hmm. But getting back to the Eagles.
Who, by the way, threw three touchdowns
yesterday.
He did a great job.
Yeah. He did a great job.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, getting back to Carson Wentz and how he's being coached, I can just tell you, I know for a fact, he needs to be coached hard.
Yeah, and you've said for a long time
3 years
now,
I've said this.
Not only that, along the position coach, but if the position coach isn't doing the job right, if the message isn't being received, if there's a disconnect, whatever that is, right? We don't know, we're not there, but if that is going on, then Doug's got to step. Why doesn't Doug Peterson look in the mirror and say, look, this is not good, I need to intervene? Instead, we hear Doug is non-confrontational and may not want to, you know, he'd rather fix the offense and say, well, we're going to go up-tempo, going to do short, instead of saying, Carson, come here, let's talk about this. Because I think this is what separates Andy and Doug. People think Andy coddled McNabb. In the press conferences, he did. Andy could get on his coaches, and he could get mad behind closed doors. Most people who are reporters who cover the team knew that Andy very easily, by the way, could get on people. We've seen it.
There's a public Andy, and then there was the coaching Andy.
Mm-hmm.
Andy, and I mentioned this the first hour, so now I could kind of take this in further. Coaching coaches is extremely important. You have to know what they're good and not good at. And as you brought up, sometimes you have to jump in. Andy was the master at coaching his coaches. He just had this knack for understanding. Now, did he lost a lot of coaches with the Eagles, and I think that was part of his downfall here.
Yes, later down.
Right, really bad.
Right.
Really
I mean,
bad.
He had a really good cocoon there for quite a while.
Childress and Ron Rivera and Spags.
And Shermer was a good coordinator.
Shermer and Sean McDermott. You go through the list of coaches, guys who would become head coaches.
Right, Rivera.
Yeah, so he had such a great staff. And then when you don't have it, but part of it is you've got to realize, and what Joe Banner told us, actually, when we had him on, is that Andy and his, when they interviewed him in 99, his binder that he had five coaches deep per position that mm-hmm. he knew, okay? He knew who the great coaches are. Most of Doug's coaches he didn't hire. Now, that being the case, you still have to know them when they're working for you. Okay, is this guy coaching hard enough? Is the message getting through?
Right.
It's clearly not getting close. It's not getting through to Wentz. That's why we're bringing this up. Wentz, I'm told by multiple Eagle sources, needs to be coached hard. He needs to, and when he came in 16, he was a little bit entitled. He's a big man on campus at North Dakota State.
Mm-hmm.
They played in pro offense. He thought he was the man until DeFilippo got his hands on him, and that changed.
Right.
Because he got in his grill, and he you know, they went at it a little bit. You know, it's Doug actually talked about it. They would go at it a little bit. Well, I forget what his phrase was a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But fact of the matter is the guy, Wentz needs to be coached hard. And he needs to respond. And he needs to dread going in that Monday meeting. Because I know by position coaches, the guys who are hard on players, these players don't like it. And then eventually they're going to respond and not play as poorly.
Yeah, I hate hearing when people call up, and I'm not attacking fans. It's the actual verbiage of it. When people say, man, this team, you know, should have never let Flip go, or should never let Frank Wright go, or these guys were the most important parts of the franchise. Okay, Flip was obviously a very good coach for Carson Wentz because he got into his ear. However, it's the NFL. You are not going to keep your coaching staff in place for 15 to 20 years. You've got to move on, right? You've got to be able to have other coaches come in. Bill Belichick loses coaches all the time. He brings other guys in.
And it starts
they
with
win.
Him, though.
So right. It starts with Bill. And that's right. My point about Doug. We have to get over this whole Frank Reich, DeFilippo exactly. thing and say, look, Doug, coach this guy
They're
harder.
Gone. They're
right.
long gone.
Yeah, they're not coming back.
You make such a great point. Doug, now again, we don't know this. Doug, if he's not heavily involved, he needs to. He doesn't. It's not about changing his mechanics or coaching him, taking some of the responsibilities away from Press Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you're sitting in with Press Taylor, watching him work. If you need to jump in and say, Carson, why did you do that? We didn't teach you that. That's the and say it in a stern way. You don't need to curse or mm-hmm. raise your voice. You go, we didn't teach you that. What are you doing? Enough. Stop. Don't do it again. Get through to the guy. And it's clearly, whatever the messaging is, it's not getting through.
No, it's going to be tough to get it through when you've got these opponents on deck. And
good luck.
And thus the quarterback looks at himself in the mirror and says, I know I got to change. And after that performance on Sunday, you know, two more interceptions, I can't imagine that he doesn't think so. But
see, he's doing it his way.
Uh-huh.
Now the coaches have to do it their way. That's where they're at with this.
Is Press Taylor, even if he's being listened to, as good as DeFilippo or good enough to be able to tell Carson exactly what Carson is doing wrong?
That's the big issue, isn't it? I know he's a super nice guy. And as I've tried to maintain here, being smart does not make you a good position coach.
Right.
It's number one, command. And two, to give the proper messaging. And three, to get results.
Right. Well, I agree. If I'm Press Taylor, I'm the first guy that's really worried if the Eagles come out of this three-game stretch 1-4-1 or 0-5-1.
The finger is on him.
He would be the first domino, I believe, to fall.
There's no question. It's on him. And that's, look, we made it clear since we started the show 3 years ago, we know for a fact the owner's involved with coaching.
Yeah.
In terms of analytics, and if he's not happy, he doesn't see innovation, he got involved with... It's been reported, so we certainly talk about it and expand on it. He was involved in the coaches being fired, not mm-hmm. being retained, Groh and Carson Walsh. Whether they deserved it or not, Jeffrey got involved, and he wants what he wants. And by the way, as we move on here, have you seen any innovation on the offense so far? I sure as heck have not seen it.
No, I don't even know how you get innovative when your quarterback's not really playing well.
But
you're right. How are you going to help him?
Pre-snap on offense, window dressing, as you've called it.
Yeah.
What have they done to make... to make the defense think.
Let me take this even a step further, because I tweeted this today, all right, after Doug talked about modifying the offense. What happened to the RPOs is what I tweeted.
Yeah, do they even do that anymore?
Now Brandon Lee Gouton of SB Nation, Bleeding Green mm-hmm. Nation, wound up tweeting me a Pro Football Reference advanced data on mm-hmm. passing, mm-hmm. and it said that Carson Wentz has the most RPO pass attempts in the league. And I was shocked by that.
Look like
I did the homework. I checked in. I'm told they run way fewer RPOs than they did 3 years ago, you know, when or 3 years ago when they actually won
the Super Bowl on it.
So what happened to those?
I don't know.
And people, that wasn't just a Nick Foles thing. That was even Carson Wentz that year. It's just that they probably put in more for Nick because they thought he was good at it. But that was a recipe for success for the offense, and it's almost gone.
I just don't... Carson's inaction has nothing to do with being innovative. It's just about, okay, what are you doing to impact the defense?
Right.
To make them think. We were talking about Schwartz and his lack of pre-snap disguise. That's a fact coming from other teams who have done tape analysis of the Eagles for advance work.
Sure.
So the coaches have to take some responsibility here. Yeah, the quarterback's a problem now. We all know that. My mom knows that. But what are you doing to give the defense something to think about? It's everyone's doing it. What? By the way, the team that they're playing... No one did more pre-snap movement than Kyle Shanahan last year in the National Football League. It was something like 75%.
Oh, all right, 610-632-0975. Oh, look, Mrs. Kaplan is on line 3. No, actually,
she needs a better television. Is she on HD yet? I got to ask.
George in Philly is up next on Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, George?
How you doing, man?
Good, how are you?
How do you think this is what Jeffries was saying about him, and everybody called him a snake and a rat? He was saying, and I love Carson, he was saying all of this, and nobody brought that up.
Saying what?
He's saying Alshon Jeffrey was insinuating all these problems.
Yes,
about,
he was saying this. And everybody, Carson was having a good year, so everybody blew it off as Jeffrey was running.
But George, I don't think that people were saying Alshon was wrong on that. I just think they were saying, why would you publicly slander your quarterback anonymously to the media? That's not helpful.
Okay, well, that's fair, but he was saying that he was, and I'm paraphrasing, that he was walking around like he won something. Like he was acting like he was the big man on campus there. And he hadn't done anything yet.
Yeah, thanks for the call.
That's not really what Jeffrey
I don't
was
remember.
Saying.
I thought it was more that he was making. I remember the quotes from. Was it Jocina or the other story?
And
that came out
of Guido.
It was more that like he's overcomplicating. What can be a very simple but efficient offense.
Not taking the easy play, right.
Yeah, not
right,
it wasn't, I don't think it was as deep as George was saying, but I don't think it's a great recipe if your quarterback is struggling to just go out to the media and bash him anonymously.
I do want to say one thing, though. Carson really played hard yesterday. As poorly as he played, he certainly got hot at a certain part of the game, and then that touchdown run was guts. I mean, that thing.
No doubt about it.
He definitely put his heart out there. He needs to play better, but he certainly showed some heart there, and that was good to see.
Yeah, and by the way, if you listen to the team's quotes now, whether it's Brandon Graham, whether it was Miles Sanders, who said he played some big ball football yesterday, the leadership I have not heard being as much of an issue. I don't think what Adam and I are trying to convey here is that Carson knowingly goes into these meetings and, you know, flips the bird to the coaches and says, I'm going to do it my way. It's bad habits that are very difficult for him to see and get over. And again, when no one's holding your feet to the fire about it, you don't realize it's that's the problem facing.
What I'm saying is the lack of balance when he drops back, it's falling off his throws. He's not being taught that. That's on him.
Mm-hmm.
Those habits, as you're bringing up, are a quarterback, as one source explained to me, he's freelances, his mechanics, this guy has five or six teams, one of them the Eagles, because they're on a schedule, so as an advanced guy, he got them. And he broke down every pass that Carson threw last year, and he goes, it's very consistent. He does a lot of things that are not coached, will never be coached, that are bad.
Mm-hmm.
And they're correctable because he's watching the tape, and it's just he wants to do what he wants to do. And you can't do that. When you're doing it his way, he fails. When you do it the coach's way, he's probably going to be successful. It's all coachable and it's all fixable, but it's up to him.
Right.
Again, to sum this up, the coaches could only do so much. So as much as people want to blame Press Taylor and Doug Peterson and all the other offensive coaches, at some point, coach, it doesn't matter anymore. It's on the player.
It's a two-way street. It's no doubt about it. 610-632-0975. Remember, Inside the Birds is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code FANATIC for a special offer when you sign up. That's code FANATIC for a special offer when you sign up only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Let's talk to Ryan out west in Phoenix. He's on Inside the Birds Radio with Jeff Mosher and Adam Kaplan. What's going on, Ryan?
Hey, man. How you doing?
Good.
Excellent. How are you?
Real good, real good. So this is on Doug Peterson and the NFL. I personally think a tie in the NFL is the dumbest thing in all professional sports. There's only 16 games in the season. They mean too much. I don't know how you implement. You either play more OT or go to college, something like that after the first overtime. But then Doug Peterson's fine. You get backed up. You don't want to try a 63-yarder. I get that. How do you not go for a Hail Mary laterals?
Like, yeah, he said that. Like, he could have done that. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, to like, Doug's credit, Ryan.
Hello, you play to win the game.
Yeah. I mean, to Doug's credit.
Ryan plays his coach in Phoenix.
Look, Ryan, you don't get this very often, but the head coach has already said he screwed up and he wouldn't do it again. I mean, usually we would argue about this for weeks, but he agrees with you. I think the issue is that, you know, you want him to be quick. You want him to think on his feet and have that already hammered down before it happens.
I would agree. So I played 15 years of football growing up. I played my first 2 years in college. So I played a lot of football games in my life. My first game freshman year in high school was a tie. That's the worst I've ever
done
any loss. And I can't imagine how those players feel on a professional game just going, well, tie.
It does feel like a waste.
You want to hear something funny? I said to someone with the Eagles last night, I said, I hope you didn't have to kiss your sister. Because thank God I don't have one.
That's what our coaches told us after the game my freshman year. I didn't know what that was because I never had
I was like, what does that mean?
like, you just kissed your sister, boys. And we're like, huh?
Yeah, exactly. It's not a great thing to imagine.
Mind blowing to me.
Yeah. No, I got you, Ryan. I got you. Thanks for the call. Look, though, I mean, we have to be fair about this. Ties stink, but in 2008, they tied. How about this? All right. The Eagles have had two ties since 1997.
Ironically.
23 years.
Ironically, again, the other one.
Both against the same
team.
What
are the chances?
No other team have they tied. Not only have they not. Yeah, they've just had no other ties.
And that Donovan one was not. Donovan didn't know the rules.
I almost tweeted last night. Yeah. I wonder if Carson Wentz knows the rules.
Oh, by the way, did Donovan tweet last night? I didn't notice.
Oh, what did he say?
No, I didn't notice.
No, I don't know if he tweeted.
Anyway.
No, that is kind of funny, though. To be fair, in 2008, that tie helped get them in to the playoffs instead of losing the game.
Was that
because they finished
Dallas
9-6-1? I think instead of not. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, when they blew out Dallas, they had to win. They had to have the craziness of Tampa.
I mean, that
losing
whole year and, was that. That
oh my
crazy.
God! I remember being in the press box at the Link and thinking. And in fact, I think they. Well, I don't know if they flexed it. I don't know if they had flex scheduling then, but I do remember like the Eagles game was at 4:00.
Right.
And they just needed everything to go right. Like, you couldn't have, like, five things had to happen, and it all happened, and they got in.
Mm-hmm.
But, the tie
I think
here.
The Raiders had to win that day. And if you remember the Raiders during that time period, that's not
right.
Doesn't happen very
did
often.
Did they beat Gruden?
Did they beat Tampa? I think they did beat Tampa.
I think it was crazy. It was something crazy had to happen. Ironically, his former team. But, look, this team is 0-1-2 in the NFC East. And as you mentioned earlier, this three-game stretch is murderous. I mean, San Fran, who's shown that they could win on the road, and with all their injuries, they have 9 guys hurt on defense, 5 on injured reserve. It's really remarkable what they're doing. And then the Ravens, who are great at play tonight. And then the Steelers, who are really good, who had a good comeback from behind win against the Texans at home. So good luck, Eagles. They're going to need to win at least one of these next two games. And it's amazing they have not won a game since last December.
It's hard to believe. And not only that, I mean, the schedule, then they get the Giants, and you know, you hope by then they're a little bit corrected, but they'll have some pretty tough games after
then
that.
Then they have a pocket, right. Then they need a, then they have a pocket.
Don't they play Seattle again this year, and they play Cleveland?
They play Seattle.
Yeah, they better get things turned around. All right, we got one more segment to go. Adam Kaplan, Jeff Mosher, Inside the Birds Radio here on 97.5 The Fanatic.
97.5 The Fanatic.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
The Fanatic. Now, back to Inside the Birds.
With Jeff Mosher and Adam Kaplan.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 97.5 The Fanatic, Philadelphia.
All right, Inside the Birds Radio back here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Jeff Mosher, Adam Kaplan. Catch our podcast, the Inside the Birds podcast, on any podcast platform that you use. Also, check out InsideTheBirds.com. We do a lot of writing on that as well. So we hit you on YouTube, we hit you with the podcast, and we hit you with the written content as well on InsideTheBirds.com. We pretty much got you covered everywhere.
And you wrote a piece today, did you not?
Yeah, and what I really wrote was that I was trying to compare last year, December, you lose to Miami, everything is terrible, you think you're at rock bottom, but you're able to turn it around because You're facing a really weak schedule there. I mean, the only game they had to really worry about was Dallas. It was here. They won the game. Tip of the hat. But I was saying how this year is different because your next three games are really brutal. And as we were mentioning, they got games later in the year that are brutal too. Their margin of error isn't as great. Not that it was great in December either, but at least they were playing really bad teams. Now, they do have this year, Adam, an extra playoff spot, right? An extra wild card.
Yes, correct. In each conference.
And again, that's where that tie might come in handy because you might be slugging it out with some 8-8 teams
exactly.
Right there. So in your 8-7-1, you'll get the advantage. But we're far from that. I do think this, Adam, and I said it last week about progression to the mean or the law of averages. I look at this, take it week by week. I don't know if Jimmy Garoppolo is going to play on Sunday night. Nick Mullins has done nice job.
Okay.
He's done okay. Yeah. I mean, he's shredded the
Giants.
But
yeah, he executes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But the point is, he's not like Luke Falk against the Jets where you just know you're going to lose.
Oh, my God. That was incredible. 11
right.
sacks.
He's
yeah.
representative.
Yes.
So, but again, without Bosa, I don't know if they'll have Mostert back. If the Eagles were 30% better than what they have been, it's not like I don't see this as a guaranteed loss. I mean, you're getting San Francisco at a good time. It's just that they've got to be better. And that's where Doug comes in, right? And Doug kind of talked about this today. Last year, going into December, Doug did modify things. He knew he had no playmakers. He knew he had a hit short game. He used Miles Sanders a lot more as a multidimensional mm-hmm. weapon, which I think he can do
and
again.
And the quarterback has got to hit Miles when he's open.
Right.
With yesterday's real route. Oh, my
yes,
God.
Yes, the quarterback has obviously got to get yeah. right. But he can design an offense, and he talked about this a little bit today. I know Tyler Zuli was good enough, our crack producer, to have the sound available. So let's hear what Doug Peterson today said about how he plans to fix Carson Wentz.
You know, there's a couple things. I think one of the ways that we do that and really to kind of maybe unclutter his mind some is to play fast, play up tempo, where players don't have to think, right? They just react. And, you know, that has been a recipe for us over the years, and it's something that we may have to lean on a little bit more. You know, we'll take a look at the game plans and make sure there's not a lot of, you know, maybe moving parts or things that, you know, have from a quarterback's perspective that he's got to get us in and out of, right? Just do more play variety, right? Where you don't have to think about a lot of things and just somehow help him to free up his mind and let him play and, you know, and make the plays that we know he's capable of making and keep coaching him and keep coaching all the guys and you know, put together a game plan this week to go play San Francisco.
All right. So what Doug Peterson is basically saying is his mind, he feels like Carson's isn't just mechanics. His issues are related to pressing, overthinking mm-hmm. it. And, you know, we talked about coaching differently or taking ownership, and Doug is sitting here, and I'm a little surprised that he's going to advertise things like no huddle or up-tempo offense in a press conference, but we know that Doug doesn't win the press conference all the time. But nonetheless, I think that you can expect to see a lot of what he's talking about. I don't know if they're going to call no huddle right away, but some quick hitting stuff, some getting the running back into the flat, and stuff designed so that Carson can just see it and throw it and get into a rhythm. Adam, we've seen that work before last year. Now, the stakes are a little bit different because San Francisco is not Washington or the Giants. But I get what he's saying here.
But giving him closer pass targets, get out of his hands quick, and get him accurate, that's been in the NFL for years. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the way you do it. You get it within 10 yards, you give him throws that you know he could hit, and you keep doing it, and then once he gets confidence, you start expanding the passing game a little bit. They tried it in week two. Unfortunately, defense was so bad, they got behind. And then Carson also was not accurate, though he made some. He was better than he was in week one.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly not good enough. It was not something we've used to see. The regression here has been so much more significant than last year. Last year, he was streaky. And then, as you said, when so many guys got hurt, Peterson did the smart thing. He said, look, we're not going to ask these receivers to do very much.
Right.
Just get open in a short area. We still have Ertz. We've got Goddard. We'll figure out a way to move the football. And they did.
Yeah. Now they're not going to have Goddard this week.
No, this week he's definitely not playing.
They'll have Ertz. They'll have Miles Sanders.
They have him. He can get him more involved in the passing game. Absolutely should be like he was last year. He was almost a savior in the passing game. He had 50 catches as a rookie.
Everybody remembers that one throw, right? Carson rolls out right, hits Miles Sanders on his knees in the back of the end zone.
Against Washington, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's there, right? You know, they had to work to get Carson to be able to make that throw again. But I feel like Doug is saying is, it's there. I can unlock it.
We're going to find a way.
We just have to crawl before
right.
we walk.
He clearly is grasping
mm-hmm.
for another way to reach Carson.
Right.
Okay, so we've showed it to you. It's not getting through to you. We're going to rein it in a little bit. We're going to help you. Now, plus, as you've outlined, they don't have a lot of pass targets available. So you're down your best move tight end in Dallas Goedert. Mm-hmm. That's a big one. He looks like he was going to have a breakout season. Now he's hurt again. In addition to having the thumb surgery,
mm-hmm.
now he's got this ankle injury. You're down DeSean Jackson. Right now you don't know if you're going to have him with his hamstring strain. You don't know if you're going to have Alshon Jeffrey. You're hopeful he'll practice more this week, so he can maybe give you a small package of plays this week.
Right.
So they'll know late in the week before they fly out what he can do and can't do. You just don't have a lot of help here.
Are you buying the J-Jaw had some lower body thing, or do you think he was not going to play that much regardless? I'm on choice B on that.
I don't know. If he had a lower body thing, why was he playing?
Yeah. I think he was not really part of the game plan.
He has not been a factor. Okay? He has not been a factor. They know he's a second round pick who's got to play. They don't have anywhere to turn here. But Deontay Burnett, they've got one more call up until they have to make a decision on what they're going to do with him. Burnett's a guy that they know. At this point, just get put people on the field like Greg Ward who can get open.
Right.
They were able to win. I know it was the Giants and Washington last year. I get it.
Yeah, it's going to be harder this time.
It is, but you got to figure out a way. And you know what? Scangarello's getting paid good money.
Mm-hmm.
They brought Marty Morningweg back out of mothballs. All these guys are here. All these supposed smart guy, Andrew Briner, they got from college football, was a former OC.
No excuses. I agree with you.
Let's get this. Enough already.
Yeah, you may have to get Boston Scott more involved as a multiple threat weapon like they did last year.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, the challenge is on Doug. He's got to change it, and he's already telling you he's going to do it. Exactly. All right, let's go to the phones. Talk to Kyle in Hatboro. What's going on, Kyle?
Hey, how you doing, fellas?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing all right, man.
Good.
It looks like we're having a confidence issue with the quarterback, and I just don't know what.
How so? How so, though?
Well, he looks like a shell of what we saw in 2017. Now, granted, I understand the weapons were a lot different back then. So I give him a little bit of a pass.
That shouldn't have anything to do with it, though. What is it?
Yeah, we were talking in the break. Like Aaron Rodgers didn't have Davante Adams last night. Right? He's got Alan Lazard, and he's got all these guys who are not like
Mark Wells.
He's never had a first round pick. I think a wide receiver to throw to.
But I hear you.
But you're talking about discount double check.
I'm getting to your point though, Kyle. Is that in 2017? I think we all thought that he was on that kind of trajectory, but he'd just been too straight. I mean, we can't talk about him like that anymore.
He had a top O line then. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say he had top weapons, but he had really good weapons and a good running backs, one of the best tight ends in the league, a good defense. I think that had all, a different coaching staff.
Mm-hmm.
I think all that plays into it. But what I don't like is all of a sudden now we're just inaccurate. All of a sudden we can't hit screen passes.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
All of a sudden
that's a problem.
I'm not a fan of Doug's play calling. But if you hit on some of the wide open guys on the plays that he does call well, we're not talking about this.
He misses simple throws.
Good point, Kyle, and thanks for the call. I will say, I think last year, before Carson Wentz really struggled during that 3-game losing streak, mm-hmm. they were losing games earlier in the year where Carson was actually gutting it out and playing well, and guys were just dropping the ball. Do you remember like the games against the early game against Dallas, the early game against the Vikings when they were already in a hole because they're getting beat over the top? Constantly. Carson wasn't playing awfully in those games. He was, I think if you look at his stats, they were pretty good, but the guys were just dropping balls left and right. But now it's changed.
I mean,
now
I guess
you just see him being
Kyle
different.
Makes a fair point that if you, in addition to Carson's inaccuracy, and Peterson talking about, clearly he thinks he's pressing the way that Doug Peterson was talking today.
Mm-hmm.
If you add all the issues up, the issues at receiver, all the changes of the offensive line, as a quarterback, maybe it's playing into his head.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe so. Or as Tyler just pointed out to us.
Yeah, that Atlanta game, right?
The Atlanta game, when the game's over if Aguilar doesn't drop the pass.
Right. The following week, Detroit, J-Jaw, again. Yeah. That's a win if he catches that ball in the end zone.
If you add it all up, sure.
Right.
I mean, look, we didn't play quarterback, so we don't know what's going through his head.
Right.
But the proper mechanics one really bothers me because that, you're not in year two, man. You're in year five.
Yeah.
This should not be happening.
And now that I think about it, he was hitting Miles Sanders down the seams against Detroit, against Minnesota. He was playing well when everybody around him was not, and then he started to not play well himself. And I wonder, it seems like the perfect storm. It's like the mechanics were never great, but they were good enough to be able to win games. But then when things started going haywire around him, then the lack of mechanics caught up, and then as Kyle's mentioning, then the confidence team to erode. And now, I do agree. I think the protection for him hasn't been great, and that his internal clock is like, if my first read, I'm either throwing it to my first read, like he tried to do early to Deshaun, or I'm just taking off, and he's not as nimble as he used to be, and he's getting hit a lot.
People are saying this is his back. It had nothing to do with it. The accuracy thing is with his footwork,
yes.
His balance. His mechanics have regressed, and coaching is definitely part of this.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to blame all on coaching. The quarterback at some point has got to take responsibility and do it like the way he's coached. He knows the way it needs to be done because he's seen the tape. He's seeing his footwork be bad, his balance be off, falling away from throws. Like, this is junior high stuff, man. He knows better than that.
Like that interception, the one...
And forcing throws,
the
yes.
one to Zach Ertz is just vintage where he threw...
Oh, the accuracy.
That's like the third week
throw.
In a row. No. I'm talking about the intercepted pass.
Oh, yeah, he forced it.
Third week in a row, he threw an inside pass when an outside would have been exactly what he needed.
Wrong shoulder.
Right.
It's kind of like a pitcher who's just off the plate.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, it's right here, man. Throw it here. Don't throw it there. He's had a lot of wrong shoulder throws this season.
Mm-hmm.
Even against Washington, where it looked like when they got, by the way, on the first two drives, when they looked like they were going to steamroll the Washington team, some of those throws are not on the right shoulder. I mean, you're a fifth year player who's so gifted. Why is this happening?
I still think
that's what puzzles me.
And I'll go down, I'll die in the hill. And, you know, next week people can call me up and rip me if they want. But I still think that Carson Wentz is not ending 2020 with a sub 60 percentage and sub 75. I feel like they're going to unlock him. It may be too late. And we can talk about that, but I feel like they're going to unlock him.
I will be on the Ron Jaworski show at 7 o'clock on The Fanatic on Wednesday. And I'm going to talk to Jaws about this,
mm-hmm.
about how he remembers being taught the quarterback position by Dick Vermeil and Dick Corey and the other coaches who work with him, the great Sid Gilman, about footwork and fundamentals and all that stuff. Because I just want to know what goes into a quarterback's head when he sees tape that's bad.
Right.
I mean, I would personally...
Especially repeatedly.
Right, like I'll give
this.
An example. When I was at ESPN, I had a coach named Jerry Madelon. He was my performance coach.
Mm-hmm.
And I dreaded going to his office when he showed me the 10 things I did wrong. It was painful.
Right.
Jerry's now a mentor of mine.
Because he didn't try to sugar it up for you.
No,
right?
He didn't. And he ripped me. And I hated it. But I took it like a man. I'm like, this will never happen again because I don't want to be yelled at. Or no, he didn't yell at me, but I don't want to be shown how bad I was.
No doubt about it.
And that's what I want to get into the quarterback's head. Why can't he do it the right way?
Yeah, that's true. All right, Louis from Sea Isle City is on Inside the Birds Radio with Adam Kaplan and Jeff Mosher. What's going on, Louis?
Hey, guys. How are you making out?
Good. How are you?
Oh, not bad. Not bad. I just hate to break up your Carson Wentz party, which I agree with. There are problems.
We're not. We're telling the truth.
I think we've spread it out fairly well.
I haven't heard one mention about what I think is the biggest problem on this team, the linebackers.
Talk about that last hour, but okay.
I might have missed that. I was just getting off.
We didn't spend a lot of time on it. Go ahead.
We haven't gotten a turnover. You're telling me you can't get one turnover against the Cincinnati Bengals? Another thing.
Especially as often as they hit Joe Burrow. I mean, like
18 times.
Yeah, they hit him so much.
You hit him so much, a rookie quarterback, you're telling me you don't have a guy that can go out and make a play on the ball? Well, what's killed the Eagles this season is the M word, momentum. We've never had a good momentum going. We always do something to shoot ourselves in the foot and stop it, and stop ourselves. We're beating ourselves, which I think is obvious. And to this point, I just have to say this. The Jalen Mills celebrating is getting out of control.
Yeah, people are not happy about that.
I didn't know about that. Thanks for the call, Lewis. Yes. I did not realize Jalen Mills was the Green Goblin's getting under people's nerves.
People were complaining today in social media about Jalen Mills and celebrating after a play. And
he's always done that, though.
I know. Jalen did not have a great game yesterday.
He hasn't had a great three games.
Quite frankly, their defense, I'm told on defense, we'll have more about on our Wednesday morning show on the defensive tape. So far that I know that Brandon Graham was terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Hargrave is not there yet physically. He's not back from his injury. From a conditioning standpoint, he's not right. He's
Sweat
not there
and Barnett
yet.
Look good.
Barnett's getting better. The linebackers, for the most part, were horrendous.
Mm-hmm. But let's be real. Yeah. I mean, they were facing a Swiss cheese offensive line. I mean, this was not the game where you're like,
they did their job. But the linebackers were bad. Other than Slay was terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Good job by him after he hurt his arm to come back, and he was a man. He talking to the Lions about him, he's so competitive. And I think what happened there, Jeff, was he got beat down by the losing. Mm-hmm. Year after year, he wanted a new contract. And
poor guy, he came here.
I know, he's probably expecting to win. Look, the Eagles tried to get him last year at the trade deadline.
Right.
But they couldn't get him, couldn't work the competition out. But he's been a great story. But other than that, they've not been a lot of good stories on this team so far.
No, not a lot of them. Let's talk to Jeremiah in Pottstown. What's going on, Jeremiah?
Love the show, guys.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hey, I heard a stat today. 2017, Carson Wentz's completion percentage was at 60%.
It was. It was not as high. I mean, that was his second year. And you're right. He was way more of like a swashbuckler, a guy who can push the ball down the field.
Unbelievably aggressive, and they loved it. I asked the Eagles that then. I said, are you concerned about his completion percentage? No. They said no, because we want him to be aggressive. We could live with him being a low 60%. He's probably going to be in his career, Jeff, 62-63%. The 68% or whatever it was in 18
little bit
was
an anomaly. Yeah.
Major anomaly. It'll never be that high again. He's not, because one of the things you love about him when he's right is how aggressive he is.
Right.
Like Daniel Jones is like this, or the Giants, super aggressive thrower.
Right.
You want the guys to be aggressive. You don't want to take it away from them. You just want to make better decisions. Throws you know you can't make, that you have no business making. The one against the Rams is ridiculous.
And by the way, he only had 7 interceptions. He had cut it down from 14 to 7. So even though, Jeremiah, you're right, he wasn't the most accurate guy in the world even then, he wasn't throwing it to the opponent on a regular basis.
But we all saw him throw that year. He was unbelievable. I'd said it then, and I'll say it again, the best football I've ever seen by a quarterback here, and that includes Randall Cunningham at his height for his ACL injury. That includes Donovan McNabb, Jaws. I'm not old enough to remember Norm Van Brocklin, but all the quarterbacks we've seen here, Michael Vick, I was at that game working for FoxSports.com, the crazy game in Washington, which is one of the best games I've ever seen by a quarterback live.
Yeah.
But never have I seen a season like that with Carson Wentz. 17, it was just ridiculous.
The Houdini-esque way.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Throwing passes like while he's getting sacked and hitting guys in the end zone.
It was special.
Yeah, unfortunately, it feels like lightning in a bottle now. Mm-hmm. All right, let's get one more before we get out of here. We'll talk to Jack in Phoenixville. What's going on, Jack?
Jack, you're up.
What's up?
What's up, Jack?
I just think Carson Wentz just looks worse than he's ever been, really. I mean, week 2, we had 1 QB pressure, and he could not find a target. And I know we're short on receivers and all this, but...
Yeah, he wasn't hit at all in week 2. There was no excuse for those interceptions, no doubt about it.
And week 3, like, that's just a must-win game for him. Like, maybe if we're 2-0, we can take a tie. But he just took a tie at 0-2 to one of the worst defenses and teams in the entire league.
And thanks for the call, Jack.
I think that's why we say it doesn't feel like a tie. It feels like a loss.
It does. It does, because they didn't play well.
Yeah.
I mean, against an awful team against the Bengals. That's why, you know, in our pregame show, we're like, one of these days we're going to get an Eagles pick right. And I'm 0-3 this season. I've never done so poorly picking the Eagles game.
Mm-hmm.
No, I'm obviously going with the Niners this week, and I accept the Costanza theory. The opposite will probably happen.
Mm-hmm.
But my goodness gracious, this team—I could understand the venom from the fans. They're actually exasperated.
Well, you know what doesn't help?
They went
Adam,
crazy last week too.
You know what doesn't help? It's this. You know, the Eagles tie a game they should win. Wentz looks terrible. Well, everything we detailed. Phillies get eliminated. DK Metcalf has monster game, although it came against the Cowboys, so that's good for the Eagles, but
I know it's coming
it still
next.
Hurts,
go
right?
Ahead.
All right, Nick Foles' magic comes in Chicago.
More.
Rasul Douglas amazingly plays the entire game for the Carolina Panthers, and they win. And what am I missing?
He's with the Vikings. His
and Justin
JJ.
Jefferson has 175 yards.
And by the way, I will say this. I watch a lot of that game. You could have had 100 yards. The Titans... corners decide not to cover him twice. One of them was for
deep. I saw the long one where he wasn't even covered.
Yeah, so but again, it's been a bad 3 games. You got 13 games left.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I also think the Eagles need to get away. 2 bad losses at home. Maybe sometimes you need to get away.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long drive. That's a long flight to Santa Clara Airport. I've been there many times. Great airport, by the way. It's like 7 minutes from the stadium.
Mm.
They need to get the heck away from Philly and collect themselves and get to be together for a weekend. Because they need to get their heads together on both sides of the football. It's not just offense, it's not just defense.
All right, well, we need to get away because our time is up. Devon Givens is going to be up next. Please check out the Inside the Birds podcast on any major podcast platform. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you're a subscriber, it's free. You'll get all the notifications on who we've got. We put all our podcasts on there as well. And check out InsideTheBirds.com while you're at it. Remember, check out our Sunday Inside the Birds pregame live show. 5 o'clock it'll start. Normally we've been starting, obviously at 10, but this time we'll start at 5. Great breakdown. We're getting wonderful, wonderful comments about how much we can break down this game. So make sure you're checking that out. 5 o'clock on our Inside the Birds YouTube, Twitter, or Facebook pages. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Keep it here. Devon Givens up next on 97.5 The Fanatic.
This is Inside the Birds
with Jeff Mosher and Adam Kaplan.
Presented by DraftKings Sportsbook on 97.5 The Fanatic, Philadelphia. The Fanatic's business of sports is powered by Pico for Business.
With the NFL season finally underway, expect to hear more about the league's ongoing media rights deals. In a recent report by Wells Fargo analyst Stephen Cahal, he estimates that collectively, the owners could lose up to $3.2 billion this season in lost ticket sales, concessions, and parking revenues. Now, that represents about 19% of the $16.6 billion in total 2020 NFL revenues. So how will the owners make all that lost revenue up? Through their new television rights deals, of course. CBS, NBC, and Fox are expected to renew their NFL game packages at a steep yearly increase, while ESPN is looking to expand their already richest rights deals. Expect new rights deals to be hammered out before the end of this season.
The Fanatic's business of sports is powered by Pico for Business. Take advantage of Pico's energy efficiency program incentives that can help you reduce your energy consumption. Pico.com/more savings.
Have you been back to Burlington lately? Your store is now restocked, so hurry in for more unbelievable deals on amazing brands and styles at up to 60% off other retailers' prices every day. Stop back in to see the fabulous values you've come to love, with more arriving all the time. Whether it's back to school, work, or just back, head back into your Burlington today and start getting more value for less again. Burlington, love the deals.
With so many new pet owners, Kezia's Grooming can't keep up.
Kezia's Grooming? Sorry, we'll book solid through the weekend. I can give you a call back, though, if something opens up.
It's time to hire.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. The moment you sponsor a job on Indeed, you get a short list of quality candidates from our resume database. Indeed delivers 2.5 times more hires than the other branded job sites combined, according to Breezy HR 2019. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get a $75 credit for your first job post. Terms and conditions apply.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
This is Derek's O'Reilly Auto Parts story.
After the third time jump-starting my car, I finally realized my battery was dying. So I stopped by O'Reilly to have it checked. They tested it right there in the parking lot. It was bad, real bad. But they helped me find the right battery for my car and even installed it for free. Now my car starts like new.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
At Walgreens, we've always been a place that keeps you prepped, stocked, covered, hopeful, ready, and most importantly, safe. Get the health and safety essentials you need, like masks, hand sanitizer, and household cleaners, with contactless curbside and drive-through pickup. Right now, buy one, get one free. Select vitamins and supplements. Walgreens, everyone's place for healthy and safe. Valid through 10/31. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See Walgreens.com for details.
Welcome back to Ask the Doc from the Rug Doctor Institute of Clean. Next caller.
Hey, Doc. This is Molly.
What's up, Molly?
We just got back from vacation and our house is smelly.
When's the last time you cleaned the biggest air filter in your home?
The AC filter?
Nope. Your carpet. Think about it. Those fibers are constantly trapping dirt, dust, pet odors, allergens, and packing them down too deep for your vacuum to reach.
Yuck.
I know. Gross doesn't take vacations.
What should I do?
Rent our Rug Doctor Pro Deep Cleaner. It gives your carpet a deep wash, then extracts all the filth with powerful pro-grade suction. Your whole house will smell fresh again.
So my carpet's an air filter. Learn something new every day.
Here at Rug Doctor, we're not just deep cleaners. We're deep thinkers.
Thanks, Doc.
Rent a Rug Doctor today for just $34.99. Check rugdoctor.com to find one of 36,000 rental locations. Rug Doctor today for a cleaner tomorrow.
Ron Jaworski here for Bradford White Water Heaters. As a quarterback, you count on your team to perform consistently. It's the same with water heaters. You need one you can rely on to do its job every single day. Bradford White Water Heaters delivers worry-free hot water to millions of Americans. It's performance you can count on. If your old water heater's fumbling the ball, take it out of the game and visit BradfordWhite.com to find an installation pro and get it done. Bradford White Water Heaters, built to be the best.
This is Corey Rutter with Rutter Roofing, and now is the time to replace your siding and windows. Did you know we hold the highest certification for vinyl siding installations? How about that we are a James Hardy Alliance partner who can handle all stucco remediation and fiber cement siding installs. On top of that, we're a certified Pella window installer and can provide beautiful, efficient, and price-effective solutions to all of your exterior home improvement needs. Don't forget about that new roof as well. Visit us today at www.rutterroofing.com. We will protect your house.
And now a game of Commercial Chicken, brought to you by Progressive, where we see how long Flo can go without talking about insurance. Ready? Go.
So, traffic has been crazy lately, right? And rush hour? Forget it. Nobody wants to let you merge onto the highway. But hey, somebody let you merge or you wouldn't be there, so drivers who switch to Progressive could save big.
Okay, you win. We can't help but save customers money. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
You have to be up in 5 hours, 2 hours, 6 minutes, and when you hear... you realize that you haven't slept a wink. That's why there's ZzzQuil Pure Z's, a drug-free blend of botanicals with an optimal dose of melatonin, so you can fall asleep naturally with no next-day grogginess. It's available in both liquid and gummies, tastes great, and is non-habit-forming. Pick up ZzzQuil Pure Z's from the sleep experts at Vicks ZzzQuil. ZzzQuil Pure Z's, naturally superior sleep. Available at retailers near you.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
When you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. We offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online and pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. We'll even bring it out curbside. Or you can have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Tyrone Johnson here. Seasonal beers pop up this time of year, but there's no comparison to Heineken's fall lineup. It's not a new product, just the crisp, refreshing taste Heineken's known for. Heineken Original Lager is made with 100% natural ingredients with pure malt and their famous A yeast, which makes Heineken an all-around, all-the-time kind of beer. Whether you're headed out or staying indoors, enjoy always seasonal Heineken Original Lager. Pick up a pack or have it delivered. This is definitely the right season for it, but no matter when you enjoy Heineken, please enjoy responsibly.
Ante up, Pennsylvania, because Poker Stars is live in PA. This fall, the chips are going.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.